So I'm Shariki Kumanyika, and I'm going to be a discussant for this session. I have no relationships to disclose, or none that relate to this. Couldn't resist that. Now I have to figure out how to advance the slides, and I'll be all... Okay, I just clicked in there. One thing I really like about the session that my colleagues have put together is that it focuses us on a very clear objective. You know, how do we reduce consumption of fast food and sort of by association and soft drinks? And what I hear in these presentations is, you know, a set of options that fall into two general categories. And I've put them up here on the slides, which is, I only have like three more slides, so you know we'll just think about this as a summary of what you've heard. So some of the options are to improve what's inside the fast food restaurant. And the others are to gear to decrease visits to the restaurant, and there's some overlap, especially in the promotion area. So improving what's in the restaurant, standards for the composition of foods that are sold and for the composition of the meals, what's offered, what types of options are offered in the restaurant, what's given as the default option in the meal, and whether it's labeled in terms of the content. And I added licensing because it's less clear to me that this is being used a lot, but it's another option, the licensing or the zoning, the requiring the restaurants to, as a condition of operating, to have a certain default or have certain options or to have labeling or whatever. Within the standards, there were several, you might have noticed, several different standards that you could use, and whether or not standards are being met depends on the standard being used. But what I heard in the presentations was that, especially Marlene's in the beginning, is that we are making some progress. There's cause for optimism with at least the standards, if they were met, would be good, and that some, you know, industry leader like McDonald's is offering some default options. So there's been some progress, although it's definitely not throughout the industry, but it does set, it gives the idea that, hey, you could do this. This could be done if we could keep that pressure on to get that done. So that would improve the consumption pattern if people choose from what's there, given the fact that they're offered certain things by default. They could always overrule that. The asterisk just means it's both the content and the portion size that could be handled by the standards and the offering and the default. I'll spend the rest of my time talking about this other trickier side, because if you think about it, it could be a win-win for everybody on this inside the restaurant part. But you don't really have many allies on this decreasing visit side of things. The customers are not necessarily rallying around you. You know, like, you know, don't make me go. You know, let me stop me from going to that restaurant. So there's advertisement, the location, the industry wants to put these restaurants where they think they can sell the food. There's a lot of promotion. I mean, you can't even remember the numbers. You know, the staggering, you know, billions of dollars that are spent on these promotions, and there's this issue of the hidden persuasion or other ways, you know, not the overt ads, but other ways that the ads are being disseminated to children and to their parents, and the cost being favorable, you know, certain types of meals like dollar meals and so forth, so it can be a bargain depending on the restaurant and the community. So if we want to reduce the overconsumption, we're going to have to do both of these. And I'm just going to go through an example of why this is particularly challenging in the communities of color, like Black and Latino communities, where consumption is higher and where it's the idea that you can change these things is even more complicated than it is for the population in general. If I can find out where to. Okay. So I repeated these challenges on the decreasing visits, the location, you know, where are the fast food restaurants, and not just where are they, but where are they in relation to the other types of food stores. And so what's the mix in a particular community? How much promotion is there? So you saw this kind of moving target with the Spanish language TV with Burger King, for example. So we're reducing some ads, but you didn't get the idea from the presentations that we're actually reducing the ad exposure. In fact, it's going up in some age groups and adolescents. It's going up for fast food. And if you were able to quantify the digital and all these different sources, you'd get the idea that nobody's gotten the message that you should be pushing this food less. So that's going to be a big barrier to reducing not just the inducement to go to the restaurant, but it's also affecting the choices because the ads, as you heard, are not necessarily for the healthier products. The hidden persuasion as a youth, and especially youth of color, are more on TV, more on digital devices, and may not have the same type of parental environment about this because the parents are also targeted with these same ads. So the whole climate in the home, in the community, is different, and it's favorable to this, and then cost is always a consideration. So all of these factors, and there's a lot of data, it could be the subject of several other sessions, all of these factors are actually weighted in a direction that drives or at least encourages fast food consumption in Black and Latino communities. And there's very good documentation of that. So what can you do? How do you address target marketing? And how do you address marketing that's targeted by ethnicity? How do you convince marketers or the audiences for the marketing that your race or your ethnic group should not be a basis for people selling you something? It's extremely complicated. As soon as you get into that conversation, you kind of wish you weren't in it, because what you're saying is that people in these communities need to be protected. Just, you know, they're not as competent to navigate the environment. It's not a good space to be in terms of arguing it. So the marketing is there. It's hard to argue against it. It's probably more effective because when you're singled out and included and things are tailored to you and you're a distinctive group, and there's documentation of this also, it's likely to be more salient to you, so it may be working better. And the point about market share is that if sales are declining, which is happening with soft drinks and so forth, you're going to go to your base. If you think you're losing market share, you may actually see an adverse effect on communities of color because it will be intensified in these communities. And Lisa Powell has published at least one paper showing that when ads were going down in both blacks and whites, they were going down more slowly in the black community. So the ratio of black to white ads in teens was actually going up while the ads were going down. It's also riskier from a business point of view because if the norm is more towards doing something in the community and the demand isn't there, it's not clear to the business person that the demand is there, then you have the circular thing where it's going to feel risky. You know, what if I offer a bunch of salads and then everybody comes to the restaurant and say, I don't want salad. Well, we think this population likes fried chicken, or we think they like, you know, something else, it's going to be riskier for us to try this, where if we're out in suburbia where everybody's walking around with yogurt in their hand, we're going to do better, you know, because we think that people want these healthier foods. So it's going to be perceived as riskier. It may be riskier from a business point of view. And then finally, this is the big point. This laundry list of things that keep the policy support from being there in communities of color. One is this paternalism argument that, you know, why is the government all of a sudden so interested in us? You know, when we don't have some basic supports and now they're, you know, really serious about making sure we don't get a soda. You know, it doesn't really have that ring to people. The collateral damage is a term that I'm using for using communities of color to get to food companies, without really thinking about how the community feels about it. So we just, you know, we want to protect you from these foods, but what we're really trying to do is punish companies for selling these foods. economic issues, you know, where'd your kid get a job, where are you getting a scholarship, there's a lot of sponsorship, that's a form of hidden persuasion, there's a lot of sponsorship in communities of color related to these products. There may be loyalty based on historical relationships. You saw the lady in the ad from Coke, that these companies have been cultivating relationships with Black and Latino populations since before the government figured out that these populations were equal. The companies knew their dollar spends the same, and you know, set out a whole workforce to sell these products for a long time. So, you know, what are the trade-offs? What's a community willing to trade off? If the funds from a tax are going to health promotion and to help the community, there's some evidence that people are in favor of it, but it's not a straight argument, and it makes us in public health, so there are three actors. So there's public health, the retailers, and the community. And we're out there on a limb all by ourselves with this, where we don't have support from either the community or from the retailers, and so we need to get that community support so we're not actually being paternalistic and deciding for people what they want. And I think it's very, you know, it's a thought-provoking situation. I found this article about the whole paternalism issue, and I just, you know, recommend it in the Journal of Legal Medicine by Robert Creighton, who I think was a second-year law student when he wrote this. Cheeseburgers, Race, and Paternalism. So, you know, look at that and think through what some of the issues are that aren't as straightforward. And he was talking about the LA fast food ban and, you know, how different people reacted to that and what some of the arguments would be for and against. So I wanted to just conclude and say that the situation for the Latino population might change because of the recent developments in Mexico. They have passed this 8 cents, I guess 1 peso per ounce tax on soda. They have passed a snack tax with it. And apparently from Juan Rivera, who's been emailing a few of us about it, they have also put an earmark in there for some of that money to go to potable water in the schools. So it's a wraparound strategy, not just we're taking the soft drinks away, but we're giving you, you know, the clean water and what we want you to drink. So things may change. This is a quotation from the Ritterman, who's been trying to get the tax passed in Northern California. So things might change. So it's a minority group here, but Mexico, that's the population, that's the majority. And apparently the lawmakers felt that they didn't like the targeting. And that's a huge market. I mean, the Latino soda, you know, so who knows? Maybe we've got something on the horizon there where you do have some of the actors lined up. So in conclusion, these are just some things to get our thoughts flowing, and then we'll have time for discussion before the session ends. I think the next steps are more emphasis on the positive strategies where we do have somebody on our side, and it's kind of a win-win for consumers, giving more choices, giving better defaults, maybe adding the licensing and zoning to create those incentives or, if you will, mandates for the retailers to create a healthier environment inside of the restaurant. Because people are going to go there, you know, anyway, but, you know, try to make it as positive as possible that, you know, we're not going to get rid of all these, you know, fast food restaurants for sure. And then the other is really to be very intentional with community-centered approaches and tailoring them for anything that's restrictive, because we might be shooting ourselves in the foot if it's something restrictive and we go into a community without creating that understanding, and I think that's what some of these initiatives have missed, so that we can build support, counter opposition, so you don't have like the NAACP coming out on the side of the company when you thought that they would be on your side, and avoid all kinds of unintended harms that we haven't thought about because we're not looking at this from a systems perspective. So those are my thoughts to stimulate your questions, and I guess we'll all come up and talk about your ideas.